Bickley and Marotta mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley Blast.
The Valley athletic scene has been a cruel place as of late. We are more scorched earth than functioning sports town. We are angry at our first love, a chilling NBA team that has underwhelmed and underperformed. We have watched injuries ravage our newest love, a baseball team that made a shocking run to the World Series last year. And we've watched our hockey team relocate to Salt Lake City. So last night was a welcome respite, wasn't it? Watching a sports town stripped of its major league status, rallying around our newest star, a wide receiver with an abundance of skill, swag, and great genetics. It was great watching Kyler Murray's reaction, how happy he was to be getting a weapon like Marvin Harrison Jr., and how fire he looked wearing an Anquan Boldin jersey. If you have grown tired of dispassionate athletes who are too cool for school, it is really something to see Kyler suddenly showing his emotions and his affinity for his new team and this new regime. You remember early in his career when he was spending off seasons in Texas, how we wondered if he even liked Arizona? Well, the selection of Maserati Marv is more than just a rallying cry for the Valley. He's exactly the kind of player Murray needs to return to the MVP conversation, and if that happens, our fortunes in Arizona will change dramatically. Bottom line, the NFL is like a drug. Like one of our listeners said earlier in the week, it's an event that fills us all up with hopamine, and we certainly needed an infusion of something to cheer about here in Arizona. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW, who make luxury attainable. Find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
Hey, listen, you know, I think with Marvin, Marvin's got two jobs. It's get open and catch the ball, and I think he can do both those two things. He's a unique guy. He's long. He's fast. He runs routes like a smaller man, and he's got really good ball skills. So, you know, I think in the end, he's going to have a chance to come in here and compete and carve himself out a role and help our offense and really be able to move the chains, catch touchdowns, make explosive plays. I think we're just really excited to get him here, get him rolling, get him to learn the system and really utilize his skill set.
It's Monty Ossenfort on the Arizona Sports Draft Show last night after the conclusion of the first round, talking about Marvin Harrison Jr., the Cardinals selection at number four. Yeah, the Kyler Murray reaction, that video, that's pretty good stuff.
It is.
We talked yesterday about the quotes Kyler gave in an interview to FoxNews.com or Fox News Online, whatever it was. Hey, I know who I want, and sometimes I've stood on the table for some guys and it hasn't worked out. Judging, he never said who he wanted. Judging from the reaction, judging from the fact that there's a video of his reaction of it, we can all now more than assume that Marvin Harrison Jr. was the guy
that he wanted.
Yes.
Yeah. So and Kyler Murray's a guy that watches a lot of college football. He's very, very connected to the college game. I don't think Kyler Murray would agree that all three wide receivers are all the same, which was one of the narratives going into last night's draft.
Yeah.
You know?
They're all drafted high.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, they were all drafted high, and I'm not saying they're not all three great players, but I do think that there was a clear number one, and the Cardinals ended up with them, which is good. And so the Cardinals are getting credit for not overthinking it, for showing the ability to think on their feet last year and trade down and trade up, maybe within the same span of 10 minutes, and then they showed the ability to be patient and to take what comes to you. And last night, I think, was a good example of that. I'm not sure that Monty Ossenfort turned out to be in the catbird seat, as a lot of people had claimed in the previous weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that run on quarterbacks, 1, 2, 3, caused a market reset, and it didn't regenerate till about 8. So there probably was no one really knocking at the door, willing to give up huge amounts of capital for either of the other three quarterbacks taken in the first round. But either way, it still ends up the same thing, and that is Marvin Harrison Jr., maybe the best singular player in the draft, maybe second best at worst, is now a Cardinal, and that's cool.
Dane Brugler from The Athletic had him as the number two prospect in this entire class at any position, behind only Caleb Williams. Monty Ossenfort at his press conference last night after the selection, he detailed some of the things from their one-on-one meetings with Marvin Harrison Jr. leading up to this selection.
Yeah, so we've got to meet with Marvin a couple times. We met with him at the Combine. It was the first time we got to sit down across from him. So we had a formal interview with him then. And then we brought him to town here for a 30 visit. And so, really, I think spending the day with Marvin was great. I mean, the Combine interviews are quick. It's a quick, it's a small sample size. But on those long 30 visit the whole day, you really get to get a good feel for who these guys are as people. And so I would say with Marvin, just maturity, accountability, dependability, I'd say he checks all those boxes. And, he's been around football his whole life. And, I think just really excited about the way he approaches his job, how he's gone about it. The people, it comes from a good program at Ohio State. They rave about him. And so we're excited. We're excited to get him in here.
The line of wide receivers that Ohio State has put into the league recently is just ridiculous. Jaxon Smith-Njigba last year, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson in 2022, Terry McLaurin, Paris Campbell. Add Marvin Harrison Jr. to that list. It's just a never-ending cycle of wide receivers.
And well,
I'm curious because we're going to talk to Bill Rabinowitz, who covers the Buckeyes for the Columbus Dispatch, on where he thinks Marvin Harrison Jr. is on that pantheon of great wide receivers recently.
Yeah,
he might be number one.
If you're looking for wide receiver, it's got to be LSU with what they have cranked out recently.
Yeah, I mean, theirs goes a little further back with,
Justin Jefferson.
Odell Beckham Jr.
But you're right. They've certainly got their own lineage as well.
Mm-hmm. And that quote when they said that he grew up in football, it's sort of interesting. People always are comparing him to Larry Fitzgerald right now. Like, boy, that's a lot of pressure to put on a guy to compare him to Larry Fitzgerald. Well, when your name is Marvin Harrison Jr., you kind of grew up with a lot of pressure and comparisons to a Hall of Famer. So that's a good place, to be.
Absolutely. The pressure is nothing new to him.
Jared, did you see your doppelganger at the draft last night?
Yes, I did. Somebody tagged me in it.
It was pretty eerie, wasn't it?
Look, a lot of times anybody who's like really hairy and dumb and goofy looking, people say, look, like, this guy actually did resemble me.
He did. Because you couldn't tell if he was hairy or not. He was just goofy.
Right. Exactly. Sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack you.
It's all right. We got plenty of time to get into what we want to talk about. It's our show, damn it.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I just pointed out to Vinny and Sarah also that Eli Drinkwitz looks just like my brother-in-law. Which is
I'll show you the pictures during the break.
Oh yeah, yeah. I see the. I don't know what your brother-in-law looks like. Nobody right? does.
I sent pictures as well. Sure. He once famously called in our show when we had Mike Hazen on and Derek Hall. Do you remember this? And he asked why they are out of toilet seat covers in the men's bathrooms.
That was your brother-in-law?
Yeah.
Did we know that at the time?
Afterwards, I told him. Yeah, this is years ago. Anyway.
Hey, can we ask Mike Hazen and Derek Hall why our bathroom in the hallway doesn't have soap in the men's room for the last 3 days? Can we ask him that? Have your brother-in-law get on that, Jared. The Cardinals have just secured their franchise wide receiver, and we want you to gear up for football season. Text Jersey to 620-620 for a chance to win a Marvin Harrison Jr. jersey when they become available, as well as a Kyler Murray autograph jersey. That's Jersey to 620-620 for your shot to win. Coming up next, we'll get a little bit more information on the Cardinals' fourth number one overall draft pick in Marvin Harrison Jr. Bill Rabinowitz, who covers the Ohio State Buckeyes for the Columbus Dispatch, joins us next here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Luke. After staying put and landing Marvin Harrison Jr. and Darius Robinson in round one, Wood, Imani, Austin Fort and the Arizona Cardinals have up their sleeve for round two. We get going at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Cardinals fans happy this morning. They get their guy, Marvin Harrison Jr., wide receiver out of Ohio State with the fourth overall pick. Kyler Murray's got a new receiver to throw to. Here to talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. with us. He covers the Ohio State Buckeyes for the Columbus Dispatch. Bill Rabinowitz, our guest on the Arizona Sports Line. Bill, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. In a nutshell, from your perspective, what are the Arizona Cardinals getting in Marvin Harrison Jr.?
I think they're getting a potentially generational receiver. He's got all the physical skills. He's tall. He's 6'4". He's got long arms. So he can catch the ball in traffic. He's also got plenty of speed. The thing that kind of sets him apart, two things really. One is his work ethic. I can't tell you how many times I've been to the Woody Hayes Athletic Complex and just seen him out there working by himself with the Monarch like jugs gun thing, running routes, catching balls. It's just relentless. I mean, they've had to tell him, you know, you can't come into the building anymore. You got to you've been here too much. The other thing is just kind of a physical thing. You know, Kevin Wilson, who used to be their offensive coordinator, said this a couple of years ago. He said, what's unique about Marvin as a receiver is that he's 6'4", and most of those guys, you know, that guy's that tall, have a hard time breaking quickly out of cuts. They're just, you know, their legs are too long. He said, but he's got the legs of a 6-foot receiver. He's kind of disproportionate. It doesn't look funny, you know, just the way he's built. So he's got shorter legs, which allows him to get in and out of cuts quickly, and yet the upper body, the arms and the height, to be able to go for contest balls. So, you know, it's kind of a unique physical package, I guess.
His analytic numbers at Ohio State are amazing. The speed and the consistency at which he runs routes, the precision of his route running. What blows my mind is his red zone productivity. How big of a weapon was this guy once you got near the goal line?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of easy from the press box to say, just throw a lob ball to Marvin. just throw it up and let him go get it. You know, they did that sometimes, but they didn't do it that much. Some of it was, you know, they had so many weapons. It wasn't just a one-man show at Ohio State. He had plenty of other weapons around him. So, but yeah, that's certainly something where you think he would shine in the red zone. And he's really good at beating man coverage. He's got good moves. He works at it. He still study the opponent. So, yeah, I mean, he's as close. I wrote this. He's as close to a, you know, flaw-free or flawless NFL prospect that I've seen in a while.
Bill Rabinowitz from the Columbus Dispatch, our guest here on the Arizona Sports Line. You know, you hear the name Marvin Harrison Jr. Obviously, he's got the bloodlines. And the way he's being described or was being described leading up to the draft, Bill, is, hey, generational type of prospect, maybe the best wide receiver prospect to come into the league in the last 15, 20 years. But that wasn't always the case. I'd love to get your perspective on his growth. I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. was, by most accounts, the third-rated wide receiver in his own recruiting class going to Ohio State. How much did you see him grow over the 3 years in Columbus?
Yeah, a lot. But people have to remember that he was coming out during the COVID period.
Yes.
Which meant that he couldn't really, you know, he didn't those showcases. He didn't have that kind of stuff. I mean, it was so much was done behind closed doors. And Marvin did a lot of work behind closed doors. The thing that I've always kind of admired about him is, first of all, he's a really nice young man. He's a very polite, humble guy. I mean, some people in the national media kind of took it the wrong way when he didn't work out at the combine, didn't even talk at the combine. And honestly, I wasn't Russell either. I went to Indianapolis mainly to talk to him. But, you know, that people shouldn't be confused or kind of conflate that and think, okay, he's a prima donna. He's not. But getting back to your question, yeah, he was a four-star recruit, not the highest-rated guy in Ohio State's recruiting class by far. But a lot of that is because people couldn't see the development he was making because of COVID and the fact that they had an abbreviated season at St. Joseph's Prep in Philadelphia. You know, his quarterback, as most people know, was Kyle McCord, who just, you know, was quarterback last year, transferred to Syracuse now. So that's an elite program. Kyle McCord was a five-star guy. Marvin Harrison was kind of overshadowed by him. Didn't last long, though, because we heard pretty much early freshman year, he's the next great one. And then at the end of the year, he got his chance in the Rose Bowl when Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave opted out, and he caught three touchdown passes, and he's like, okay, he's for real.
Yeah. I mean, nobody could guard him in that conference. All right. Let's get back to the personal, because you're absolutely right. There seem to be people who were put off by the combine stuff, and people wondered, oh, is this a diva? And the old school who are used to, you know, athletes jumping through hoops whenever you ask them to. There's also the element of Marvin Harrison not signing on to the NFLPA licensing addendum. What's that all about, in your opinion? And what kind of dude are we getting here in Arizona?
Yeah, you know, I don't follow that kind of stuff. I'm kind of, once they're gone, I don't follow the minutia of what they do. I went to the combine. I was disappointed he didn't talk there. I was disappointed a little bit he didn't talk at Ohio State's pro day. But, you know, I kept in mind that he's the rare NFL prospect that really had leverage. You know, most players don't have the kind of leverage he had.
Yeah.
Where he didn't have to work out. He could just say, just watch my tape. And his father, I'm sure, was a big influence. His father was very guarded around the media. Marvin's not. Marvin's very open around us. I mean, last summer, I wanted to shadow him for a day, and he let me.
That's cool.
I just wanted to see. I kept hearing, you know, that everyone works hard here, but then there's Marvin. So I wanted to see, okay, what is this? Then there's Marvin. So I got up at 6 in the morning and got to the Woody at 7 and followed him for, like, 7 hours, what he did, you know, the medical stuff, the work, you know, all that stuff. And the irony was, all I did was stand there and watch. The next day, my back went out. So I told him, I said, this is what happens when you get old. I watched you go through hell, and I get hurt. You got a good chuckle out of that.
That's great.
My wife doesn't know much about sports, and I told her, you know, I was doing that. She said, Melvin? Melvin? I said, who? She said, Melvin Harris? No, Marvin. So I told him, you know, and some players might kind of get, you know, minorly offended by that. He thought it was hilarious, you know, that my wife thought he was Melvin. I mean, he's not full of himself. He's very,
that's cool.
He's a hardworking guy. He's very serious, but he smiles easily. I see people there in Phoenix are going to really like him.
Bill Rabinowitz, who covers Ohio State for the Columbus Dispatch, our guest here on Arizona Sports. You mentioned, you know, Marvin Harrison's breakout game in the Rose Bowl, 3 touchdowns when a couple of wide receivers opted to sit out that game. But the run of recent receivers coming from Ohio State into the NFL, I mean, it's very impressive. How would you rate Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, up against Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson on their readiness to contribute at the NFL level?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. They're talking about NFL rookies of the year. You know, Jackson and Jigba was phenomenal, but he was hurt his last year at Ohio State. He really didn't get a chance to build on that incredible Rose Bowl performance. So, you know, I would say he's right up there. I think he has a chance to be as good or better than any of them. Here's the scary thing. In a couple of years, we might be talking about somebody who's even better, and that's Jeremiah Smith, who's just a freshman at Ohio State and is already kind of turning heads. And so the pipeline is continuing.
Well, Bill, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate the info and the insight.
Well, enjoy more of it. We certainly have here in Columbus.
Yeah, we're happy he's here. Yep. Thanks, Bill. Bill Rabinowitz covers Ohio State for the Columbus Dispatch. He joined us here on the Arizona Sports Line. Coming up next, we shift our focus back to the hardwood. Suns trying to get things together.
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem like that's the definition? Get it together for game 3.
Yes.
Against Minnesota. We'll get into that next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Reset, you know, just get back to your zone and focus on the game and try not to let that stuff distract you. I mean, you can easily let your guard down being at home and going through your route and your routine and the normal route to practice and stuff like that. You can get comfortable. But try not to get distracted and just focus on the task at hand.
That is Kevin Durant of the Phoenix Suns on whether or not it feels like being home gives a chance for the Suns to reset. Again, it better. If there's not a reset tonight, there's going to be a lot of reset in the very near future for the Phoenix Suns because their season's going to be pretty much over. A couple of teams, pointed this out earlier in the show, Bick. A couple of teams down 0-2 got home last night, and they climbed back into the series in impressive ways. Both Orlando beating Cleveland by almost 40 points. They're on the board now.
Yep.
And they had looked completely non-competitive in 2 games. And then you see the Philadelphia 76ers climb back into the series with the New York Knicks. So they avoid going down 3-0. That's what the Suns are trying to do tonight.
Yeah.
It's really hard to feel confident based on what we have seen.
No. That is very accurate. But if there's any semblance of pride and professionalism left in this basketball team, I really think that the Suns should have a big advantage tonight, because I don't think you can manufacture the desperation if you're the Timberwolves up 2-0 and playing a road game for the first time this playoff, having really dominated the last two second halves of these basketball games. You cannot manufacture the desperation the Phoenix Suns should be feeling naturally if they do still have intentions on winning this series. I will be very, very disappointed if there isn't a noticeable difference in intensity between these two basketball teams tonight.
Yes.
Because I don't think the Timberwolves are that hardcore, and I really hope the Suns are not that checked out. So they should have a huge advantage in desperation tonight, and I hope that translates.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, but also that intensity, that desperation has to be met with execution offensively, which we haven't seen. This has not looked like, this looks like the worst version of the Suns offense all year.
No doubt.
I think we can agree on that.
No doubt.
Shams Charania on the Run It Back podcast or the Run It Back show, he talked about the Suns offense and it being a concern internally right now. Like, the Suns are wondering what's going wrong with their offense.
My understanding is the Suns offense is a cause of concern internally right now. And the coaching staff, they're going to have to figure this out. If this team is going to have any chance in this series, they're already down 2-0. You look at two plays, one in the first half, Yusuf Nurkic really goes ISO on Rudy Gobert, misses really a play where you had multiple guys potentially open on the wing for opportunities. And then later in the second half, in the fourth quarter, Drew Eubanks kind of misses Kevin Durant wide open, goes for a spin move, misses badly as well. Those two guys shot 19 times last night. They're overall, their usage rating, you look at the Suns' usage rating, Booker 23.9, KD 23.3, and then Drew Eubanks 22.5. So the usage rating just doesn't seem like it's in a great place right now around the Suns, just figuring out structure.
Well, you hear it, and you heard Kevin Durant say it after game two. Take every possession, you know, take care of the basketball in every possession. But, you know, not turning it over is one thing. Getting the correct shot, getting a good shot is another thing. To be, you know, as efficient as you can offensively. And if you're having 19 possessions in one single basketball game ending in a shot by Yusuf Nurkic or Drew Eubanks, no disrespect to those guys.
Yeah,
that is not
possession.
Your offense working ideally.
Amen to that. So what they have to do tonight, we talked about this earlier, it's a cliche in basketball. When you get in the playoffs, home games generally bring out the best in your role players. It gives them that comfort to perform and to be productive. So let's hope that applies to the Suns. Let's hope they get a series of performances that the Timberwolves have received in Minnesota. That's number one. Let's hope they can score more than 100 points tonight, Vinny. That would be number two. I think they need to shoot and make more three-point shots, and it's quite a tug of war. You can see it basically on the nightly. This is a battle between what the coach wants and what the team feels most comfortable doing, and then the bowl. Thing. I really think the bowl has to be part of the game plan tonight, if only to kind of get the crowd juiced. And then maybe see what you can get out of them. So some of the things I'm looking for. And then, of course, the Devin Booker factor. He's got to put something really good on the floor tonight.
Yeah, he's got to assert himself a little bit more. Yep. Kevin Durant, on the subject of threes, the Suns shot 22 three-pointers. That didn't make 22. They shot 22 in game two. That is the lowest single game total for any team in the playoffs this year.
Yep.
KD was asked, hey, you got to get more threes up?
Yeah, it's three-point business, you know, so we definitely want to try to get as many as we can up. But good shots at the right times, not shots that's going to compromise our transition defense. You know, that's always the balance you have when playing in this area, shooting threes. So you just got to find a balance, but also just taking a good shot every time down. You know, you can't have 19, 20 turnovers. And regardless of how we play, we can't have that many turnovers, you know. So we keep the ball in our hands, we have a better chance to score.
Yeah, there's so much that needs to change offensively. I mean, the problems have been widespread throughout both games. Not enough threes, too many turnovers, not enough assists, too much stagnation. I forget who it was. I think it was Tom Chambers pointing it out. You know, five straight possessions, Kevin Durant in the corner.
Yeah, watching.
You know, be the blender. There's got to be more movement. There's got to just be more clicking offensively.
Yeah, exactly. And the natural tendencies of these superstars is to get the ball in their hand, break down their defender, drive into the mid-range, and either come up and shoot the ball or pass it off to somebody. They've got to find a little more tempo, a little more rhythm, if you will, all that kind of stuff. I hope it comes together for them tonight. The record of teams that have recovered or that have faced 0-2 deficits, 33-416. So that's exactly that 7% you were talking 7.3% about yesterday.
7.3% or whatever it was.
And the fact that the Suns have done it once in 93, they came back in a five-game series.
Yeah, they've never done it in a best of seven.
Right.
They did it in a best of five against the Lakers in 93.
And they've allowed it to happen twice in the Devin Booker era, where they've taken a 2-0 lead in the series and lost the
Milwaukee
series.
And Dallas in back-to-back years.
Then, the Dallas one, they won one other one. They got the game seven. The thing that you wonder if it's ever going to switch is you would think any adjustments that they would want to make on offense they would have done between games one and two, since they looked also bad in game one. And the fact that they looked equally bad in game two sort of makes you a little nervous. It makes you think, like, was the regular season, you guys think, just an aberration? Because they looked really good against Minnesota, obviously, in those three games.
Well, look, we had, going into the playoffs at the beginning of last week, you know, our thoughts on how impactful those three games were. And you can't completely ignore them, but you can't put all your stock into them either. I thought the last game of the three was probably the most telling because the Suns dominated that game, and it was a big game for Minnesota.
Yeah. Yes, it was. You were closer to the truth than I was on this. You claimed before the series began that when the ball went up in the air on Saturday in game one, that all of that stuff wouldn't matter. I objected to that vehemently, and it turns out you were right. It really did mean
well,
anything.
Well, it turns out it did matter because it opened the eyes of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Maybe.
They weren't playing up to their capability. You know, and we played the soundbite of Kevin Durant earlier talking about rah-rah speeches. The Timberwolves, after that regular season finale, got a rah-rah speech from an unlikely source in Mike Conley, the guy who just doesn't talk. He never argues calls. He's very quiet. He goes about his business. Ultimate pro. He's been in the league forever. But he was the guy that stood up and lit the fire under this team, reminding them of what they're capable of. And one thing you have to tip your cap to is, all right, the Suns are not getting a lot of good looks at three, but the perimeter defense has just been ridiculous by Minnesota.
Yeah, it's been really good.
In the first two games. Can they keep that up? You know they're going to be hungry to try to keep that up tonight.
Yeah, and just in the hunger of Minnesota, are we going to get an immature team that kind of downshifts a little bit? And if so, I think the Suns can take this game. They take this game, they're right back in the series. Lose this game, there's no coming back from 0-3.
Yep, that is correct. You want to be listening to Arizona Sports all day. In fact, is now a good time?
So what you're saying, you're asking me
is now
a good time, because it's a special week, as we all know.
Yeah, a very special week.
Very special week on this.
Sound like Roger Goodell.
Arizona Sports, all in for the Suns in the playoffs.
I told you should be listening. Suns fans, that was smooth by me and smooth by Jarrett.
Seamless.
Smooth.
Stockton and Malone. That was JB. That was JB smooth is what that was.
Suns fans, your code word for today is swish. S-W-I-S-H. Text swish to 620-620 right now. Enter your info. You could be heading to a Suns playoff game this weekend at Footprint Center. And you want to be tuning in to Wolf and Luke during the noon o'clock hour?
JB Smooth.
The noon o'clock hour for your next code word. Again, our code word is swish.
Swish.
It should have been, the way we deliver this, it should have been clank.
Yeah.
Swish to 620-620 right now. Cardinals had a good first day of the draft. Now what? As we head into day two, what to expect in rounds two and three. It's Bickley and Murata mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Brick!
Darius Robinson is officially an Arizona Cardinal. How will the Mizzou edge rusher play into the Cardinals' defense? Burns and Gamble will give you their thoughts, while they're also getting you ready for Game 3 of Suns Timberwolves, live from the FanDuel Sportsbook at Footprint Center, all coming up at 2 on Arizona Sports.
Listen, hey, we're really excited. We're really excited to add these two guys in, Marvin and Darius. You know, we spent a lot of time with each of them, have been evaluating them since last spring, and really excited to add the players, but more importantly, excited to add the people. Really like what they're going to bring to the table. Excited to get them here tomorrow and really get them in on the process of onboarding them into our program. So exciting night for us and our fan base and for our organization.
That's Monty Asenfort, the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, after the first round of the draft last night. Cardinals get Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 4, Darius Robinson, the edge rusher from Missouri, at number 27. So they did not address the cornerback position. And while I was on the air during the draft show yesterday with Wolf and Dave Burns and Luke Lipinski, there was this, first of all, the strange beginning to the draft, 14 straight offensive players to begin. So that pushed a lot of defensive players down. The defensive players that were picked, by and large, were edge rushers in the first round. So the cornerback position, maybe Monty Asenfort was reading the tea leaves and thought, hey, we can get a better pass rusher at 27 and still get a really good cornerback at 35.
Right.
I think that's got to be number one on the list of priorities for day two for the Cardinals.
Totally agree with you. There wasn't a cornerback gone until, what, the 21st pick in the draft, which is...
Which I'd have to do the research. That's really late. For a premium position like corner, that is very
totally
late.
Totally agree. That's really, really late. And yes, I do think what you said is accurate. I think Monty Asenfort had to make a decision right then that if I go corner, I might get a better corner at 27. But if I double back and try to get my edge rusher in the second round, they might all be gone. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably the reasoning behind that. But it does seem to be, when you talk about chalk, that seems to be where they have to go.
Although,
right away.
I am looking at last year's draft. Similar thing happened last year. First corner was not taken until 16. Huh. Emmanuel Forbes went to Washington out of Mississippi State. That didn't dawn on me, but still, the Cardinals are in position to get one at 35. So we'll have the third pick of the second round today. The number one player, according to Mel Kiper Jr., available still is a corner, and that's Cooper DeJean, the cornerback from Iowa, but Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama still on the board, and it's Rakestraw from Missouri, another Missouri kid on the board. So if the Cardinals want to go down that road, they got some options in their shopping.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And so again, and I think that when you take a look at what they've done now on the defensive side of the ball, they've kind of reworked their entire defensive line. When you talk about Darius Robinson, he's joined a D-line that now is going to include Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, and this is sort of really where the talent has to... I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of defensive players coming down the pike for the Cardinals, because this is where they seem to be the least talented, in my opinion, in everybody's opinion. So, yeah, that's kind of how I see this thing mapping out.
Yeah, and going back to what they did yesterday, I still have the feeling, love the pick of Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 4, because you plug him in as your top wideout from day one. But you still look at the rest of that room, Michael Wilson, Greg Dortch.
What a Dortch.
I don't think they're done there. I would expect at least another receiver to be picked either today, tomorrow.
I agree with
to
you.
To add to that room.
I agree.
Still think there's a little bit something missing there.
Yeah, no, listen, I think you're right. And there's a lot of value guys out there. It's a very, very deep draft for wide receivers. I think they will do that as well. But I do think that the offense is shaping up to look kind of dangerous, right? You know, when you start looking at the wide receiver room now, and Michael Wilson and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Trey McBride and the steps that he made and whoever else you might add to that mix, and then you look at the couple backs they've got now. And
Connor and Carter's one-two punch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So,
to mention number one being healthy.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they did, in last year's draft and in free agency, they bolstered their offensive line. Jonah Williams and Paris Johnson Jr. at the tackles now. If they're healthy, That's going to be a fun offense.
Yeah. I think they're going to take a guard at some point in time. I think they're going to take another wide receiver at some point in time. Probably take a couple of corners. And then you're going to strap it up and give it a shot. I'm pleasantly optimistic about what this season might look like. And again, as I said in the blast, I really am vibing on Kyler Murray being so emotive about what is going on and about this regime and that stuff that they put out last night. Yeah, it's scripted and yeah, it's staged. But like I said, there was a time when we wondered if he had that in him. And it's good to see. It's good to see.
Yeah. Going back to what could be available, we mentioned Cooper DeJean. Here's Mel Kiper on that.
I'll go to Cooper DeJean. I have him at 13 on the board. He's a corner safety. He's a hell of a football player. If nothing gets behind him, he's back from the injury, ran 4.42, vertical 38 and a half inches. He's still there in the second round. So somebody's got themselves a really good defensive back who's got versatility and is ready to perform. Very smart, very instinctive, was a heck of a player for Iowa. Had three pick sixes in 2022. Turn punts. I'm a big Cooper DeJean fan, and he's going to be a really good second round pick for somebody, and as a versatile defensive back, which is what most teams need.
Yeah, no, you know, a lot of the reaction from last night too is based on surprises. Mm-hmm. We spent some time earlier in the show talking about the Atlanta surprise at number 8 with Michael Penix Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN sharing a couple of surprises as he saw them on night 1 of the draft.
You invest $100 million in Kirk Cousins, and remarkably, you don't help your team. I thought, gosh, since March, guys, like, you're paying that bill so you can help your defense with the 8th pick. Like, it made a lot of sense to me, like, to justify that value, Chris. So, it's just absolutely stunning. I love Penix. I just don't know how he gets on the field. And then, you know, the Giants, like, saying that we're going to go with Daniel Jones over J.J. McCarthy. I was just really, really surprised. So was J.J. McCarthy, who earlier today said he thought he was going to be a New York Giant as well. So, to me, those were the big surprises. And then towards the tail end of the night, to move past the quarterbacks here, you know, Buffalo desperate for a receiver, saying we don't want Xavier Worthy or Xavier Leggett. That was a big surprise to me.
I believe that's pronounced Leggett.
No, that's funny. So, yeah, there were a couple of things. Yeah, like I said, the Michael Penix Jr. thing, that was the big curveball of the night. In fact, that footage of the GM, like, having that conversation with Arthur Blank, almost kind of like having to explain what he was doing. It's especially how Kirk Cousins reacted to it,
uh-huh.
Right? So that is something that nobody expected. It was very, very unusual because nobody in any mock draft I had seen had Michael Penix going in the first 10 picks.
No.
Did you? You see?
Especially not there.
Yeah, especially not there.
After the Cousins signing.
Yeah. And also the thing to look out for today is the 49ers drafting Ricky Pearsall, a wide receiver, at the end of the first round. There are reports out of San Francisco that they are going to be trading Deebo Samuel sometime in the next couple of days. That seems to be what the conclusion is, and that's going to hurt the 49ers.
I have a question. Would they trade him in the division?
Yeah, I'll take him.
Just wondering for a couple of teams.
Right.
One
asking for a friend? Yeah.
Imagine going out there with Marvin Harrison Jr. and Deebo Samuel.
Wow.
And Michael Wilson.
Yeah, right.
And Trey McBride.
Right.
You could text.
I'm sorry. Finally, I was going to say, and Spencer Rattler is probably the next quarterback taken. By whom? I don't know.
We were joking about it last night that after Bo Nix went to 12, who's next on the board to the Raiders at 13? Is it going to be Spencer Rattler
at 13?
They're pushing these quarterbacks up again. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Speaking of FanDuel, you can join Burns and Gambo at the FanDuel Sportsbook in downtown Phoenix today from 2 to 6. The first 50 fans who come down and show their Arizona Sports app will score a limited edition Phoenix Suns playoff shirt. I'll be down there early. Maybe I'll get a shirt. For complete details, head to the contest page at arizonasports.com. Coming up, Sarah Cazell takes us through some social studies to kick off the 9 o'clock hour here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.